Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. And today, the part of interesting person is being played by my good friend, Andy Crestedina. Andy is a co-founder and the strategic director of Orbit Media, which is an award-winning 38-person digital agency here in Chicago. This guy knows a lot about a lot of things. He's a top-rated speaker at national conferences, has written hundreds of articles on content strategy, search engine optimization, social media analytics. He wrote the book Content Chemistry, which has had, I think, like five or six editions. And most importantly, he has two super adorable, wonderful kids who I get to hang out with every once in a while when we try to have game night, but we don't even play games anymore. We just let the kids run around. Andy, how are you, my friend?
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be back. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to, as we're having this conversation, drink a beverage from our sponsor, Old Irving Brewery. Mm. This is actually a perfect one for our show because I know that you, like me, enjoy some of the darker stuff. Mm. And I am drinking, I think this is going to be hard to find, so sorry to make everybody jealous. It is called Gluttonous, and it is basically a holiday imperial stout, barrel aged. There's stuff, I don't even know what's in here, but it smells delicious and I'm enjoying it. So sorry if that makes you a little jealous.
No, that's great.
But thank you, Old Irving Brewery, for sponsoring this episode. Andy, here's my question. What, in your estimation, what is a thought leader? And do a lot of people say they're thought leaders? Are they really thought leaders?
I think it's an overblown term. It's an overused term. And I don't think it's a very good term to label yourself.
Okay.
Generally speaking, I think it is risky. It sounds arrogant. It risks sounding arrogant. But we all know that there's legitimate thought leaders out there and people who rightfully kind of claim that that label. It's a really interesting question, right? Like, this comes up a lot. Like, people always, you know, you ask them what they're doing and their content or why they do this or that, and they'll tell you, well, we do it for thought leadership, or right. Why do you have a blog? For thought leadership. Oh, you're launching a podcast? Why is that? For thought leadership. Like, you hear it, a lot of stuff gets thrown in that bucket. So I love this topic and happy to jump in. I definitely have some ideas on this, but not in any special order.
Yeah. Well, why do you think it has become overblown? Because you're right. Everybody, you know, wrongly or rightly will label themselves or other people as thought leaders. It's everywhere. It has kind of become almost a hollow word, right? It doesn't have a lot of meaning. It's like guru ninja.
Ninja, right? Expert, all these terms, right?
Why do you think it got overhyped?
Well, actually, I think the definition just got watered down a bit to where it encompasses a lot of different people doing a lot of different things. And so it just got applied more generally.
Okay.
I am looking at a definition by Edelman, right? Or Edelman? How do we say that?
Edelman works. Edelman Trust Barometer. Yeah.
Yeah. These guys. So this is how they define it. Free deliverables organization or individuals produce on a topic they know a lot about, and they feel others can benefit from having their perspective on. Wow, that sounds like content to me, right? That's like any kind of content. That's like a helpful how-to article. Thought leadership, and then basically they say what it's not. Thought leadership in this context does not include content primarily focused on describing products or services. That's also a good definition for content marketing, right? It's like, so if you take that definition and just say this is any content marketing, then sure, it's not weird that 100,000 people, literally 100,000 people in LinkedIn have added thought leadership as their in their title.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
So that I think is a big part of it. It's just that it's like, what the heck is it? And if you take a definition that broad, of course, it includes, you know, me and you and anybody who publishes almost anything.
Right. And I mean, because you shared that definition and I was like, that's not thought leadership. That is, as you said, content marketing, or I would even say just personal branding, right? Mm-hmm. Just saying, yeah. Hey, these are topics that I know something about.
Yep.
It might not be unique. I definitely wouldn't use the word leader, but it's something I know about.
Right.
So I guess if you had to define it, and without even saying whether certain people are or are not thought leaders, like what is thought leadership to you? Like what is true thought leadership versus content marketing, which I know is something you speak about a lot, you talk to a lot of audiences about. I mean, what would you say is maybe the distinction between the two?
Well, great question. My definition for a long time, up until like a few months ago when I started this, you know, having these big conversations, was that content marketing is often just helpful, useful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Helpful, like utility, right? Like
okay.
The stuff I write is all just how-to stuff. It's almost all I do is write how-to articles. Great. People like that. Lovely. Meets marketing goals. Fine. I'm a teacher. Perfect. That's what I was trying to be. And when people said like, oh, if I ever was called a thought leader, it made me uncomfortable. And I tried to explain how, no, that's not actually anything like what I'm doing. Because I always, in my view, a thought leader was someone who stuck their neck out and stated an opinion and said that they are for and therefore against something. A thought leader is original enough and you typically controversial enough that they create tension through their content. They put out a strong POV.
Right.
Now, that is not what I do. I'm not. And so then this started a debate, and I actually got to ask Seth Godin this question at an event, which was cool. His answer
nice.
Was cool. Which, by the way, here's what Seth Godin said about it. He said, management is about power. Leadership is about enrollment. Okay, so he's taking a step back and saying leadership is about, you know, having people join your cause. He says, thought leadership always creates tension and creates outsiders. It's about making assertions. You have to be willing to be wrong. You will be certain that people will disagree. So he's kind of on the same page as me in that like thought leadership requires a perspective that is partly strong opinion,
okay.
which is op-ed, which is different from my content. But that led to more conversation in this big thread on LinkedIn that I think you saw.
Yep.
And a bunch of people are chiming in and saying like, it's this, it's not this. So here's a list of possible criteria. Is it helpful teaching content? Is it strong opinion and controversy? Is it research and data? Or does it have to be new? New ideas, new perspectives. Is that
right.
a criteria? Must it come from an individual person? Or is it possible for a brand to be a thought leader? Does it trigger action? Does it change thinking? I've got a friend who runs a influencer marketing platform called Analytica, Tim Williams. And Tim says that in their algorithm, they don't consider anybody to be a thought leader unless they are referenced by the media, unless the analysts and other influencers are talking about them, which is interesting if you're trying to algorithmically define it.
Right.
So fascinating, right? So some of those I would say are important criteria. Others I would say maybe not as necessary. So yeah, if you break it down like that, I don't know, which of those felt right to you?
So it's interesting. My take on thought leadership, you didn't really mention any of the anything you mentioned. My definition doesn't really fall into any of that. I guess maybe close
okay.
to one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've always thought that there are very few true thought leaders. Because maybe kind of what Seth was saying, I think there's this idea of you lead somebody or maybe even somebodies, right? You know, whether it's our industry, a culture, whatever it might be, to a new place, right? So like if you were saying, I'm using thought and I'm sharing ideas that are new, that are novel, I think there's often an element of either recontextualization or synthesis, where if you think about like what a thought leader is doing, they're going, and by the way, I'm not saying Elon Musk is a thought leader,
mm-hmm.
but he's just somebody I think of where he goes, well, what about having all electric cars? What would have to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's like there's this piece of imagination. Mm-hmm. So I, and maybe that's controversial because a lot of times the status quo is threatened by things that are new and novel. Mm-hmm. But I guess in my mind, just, I know a lot of people who consider themselves thought leaders, but it's, they're just kind of, you know, highly opinionated, but still along a very specific track, right? They're not saying anything new.
Yeah.
So that's kind I had a quip that I came up with once, was something along the lines of thought leaders don't make statements. They ask questions. Right.
Interesting. Yeah.
So that's kind of always been my take on it. Like what if college was free, how would that impact what we have to do on a practical level in our society? Mm-hmm. Right. And then go from there. So you could have thought leadership in that space, or even, you know, what is business going to be like if we automate most of our job functions, you know, the people, not that I paid a lot of attention to politics, but the Democratic candidate, I don't know his first name, Yang. But just the idea of like, hey, we need basic income because, and right there, so there's some thinking around that he's put in, and he's positing a new idea. So that, I don't know, is that, do you think that aligns with what people are saying, or is different?
No, I think it's a better definition than what I'm usually hearing, because you're making... I like it. I like it because you're setting a high bar, and you're talking about leadership, taking someone to a new place, and you're talking about thoughts, like big ideas, like something like that. I love so I think Andrew Yang is a great example. How about this one? Malcolm Gladwell doesn't actually do the research he talks about. He's basically just recontextualizing it, like the 10,000 hour thing, and like most of the stuff he talks about in The Tipping Point and Outliers. He's not the one who did all those PhD theses, right? He's just kind of did a better job of packaging it. Is that a thought leader?
You know, I think he's, I would maybe argue that he's close. I don't know if it's even so much as the packaging it, which I think he's an amazing, I mean, he's one of my role models as a writer, right?
I love him, but I consider him to be a repackager. That's why I love him.
But I think he's one thing that he is also good at is, I think even beyond repackaging, he's a connector of thoughts, right? Right.
There's your synthesis. Yeah.
The synthesis idea. And I think that one of the things that even, let's get out of our present day and age, if you look historically, the cultures over the last couple thousand years that have been really successful are always the ones that were synthesizers, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's the Romans, whether it's the Arabs in the 10th century, like it's just anybody who could say like, oh, we'll take this idea from here, this idea from there, and realize how they're the same, but then how the sum is greater than the parts. And so I think Malcolm Gladwell is a great example of that.
Well, generally, I think that's how people sort of define intelligence. I think mostly when someone says that person's smart, they mean that person connected ideas in a way that I hadn't seen before. I think that's almost like the proxy for intelligence. Whenever you hear someone talk about smarts, like that's kind of what they mean. It's like making different connections, connecting different ideas, which I don't know. Intelligence is tough enough to define just the same as thought leadership.
Right.
I'll throw out, there's a great post on Copyblogger by Sonia Simone, one of my content marketing heroes. It's a rant against this term thought leadership. She starts by calling it a clumsy verbal construct that has no need to exist. So she's cranky about it. She says that being a great teacher, which has always been my goal, is far more useful than a thought leader. She thinks that thought leaders are obsessed, or people who are obsessed with this idea are also obsessed with newness. And then she goes on to write in huge bold letters, novelty is not wisdom.
Right.
We don't actually need a bunch of new thoughts. We need to pursue and implement the existing thoughts that make sense. There again is your point of synthesis, right? It's that they're combining existing concepts. Musk didn't invent the electric car. Gladwell didn't come up with the 10,000 hour rule. I think that's I think that's an interesting criteria. We're going to do a survey. Michelle Lin is going to work with SurveyMonkey and hopefully partner. We'll make a little survey about like which of these things do people think are requirements or criteria for thought leadership. What about the idea of research, which came up a couple of times already. Do you think research is a, and publishing original data is a criteria for thought leadership?
That's a good question. I think my first instinct is actually no. Mm-hmm. I think knowledge is important. It's interesting when you were talking about novelty, or you know how Sonia was going, like novelty isn't wisdom. I'm really kind of reminded of the fact that this might be also a cultural construct, right? So we're mm-hmm. very new focused in the United States, in America, mm-hmm. like new. And what I always find amusing is if you look at terms from, you know, Eastern philosophy. So for example, specifically guru or lama, right? Mm-hmm. Which is kind of the Tibetan take of guru. If you were a good guru, you weren't trying to be new. You were trying to be part of a lineage, right? And it was literally like, in fact, in Lama, you know, the Dalai Lama is not about trying to be a new person. Like they believe he's literally a reincarnation, right? It's the same one. So it's always funny to me when there's people on like LinkedIn going, I'm a guru. I'm like, nah, I don't think that's what you mean to say. I think you have to be knowledgeable, right? I think you have to be, whether or not you're doing the research yourself or taking it from somebody else, I guess my take would be you have to have some actual grounding or factual information and knowledge mm-hmm. that you're using as the basis. But I don't know if you have to do that research yourself.
Well, here's another conversation I've had about this. I keep talking to people about this. Lee Price, her business is in helping brands move into a role of thought leadership. She calls it, she equates thought leadership with generosity, which I like. Mm-hmm. And she says that a lot of what it is about is experience. She calls it experience-based perspective. And that the people who are the closest to the clients, the closest to the work, the farther down people in organizations are actually better positioned to put out content and ideas that are relevant to thought leadership, because they're the ones who have that experience-based perspective. They can make the right recommendations. They see, you know, so right. What she wants to do is help them see the big picture in all those things and draw the through line straight through it. So you would agree with Lee on that point, I think, right there for sure.
Well, but does that go more to that idea of teaching that you were, yes. you were mentioning before?
And she does not have as rigorous of a definition as you or I do, because she would call, utility, helpful, useful content would qualify, I think. You wouldn't have to have a strong opinion or original research or to be controversial or to do much synthesis. But it is about having, making it a bigger idea, making it grounded in reality, making it right. practical, and making it one continuous kind of... So her example is like, you know, she's working with the client. Oh, we're going to make a podcast. What's your podcast about? Oh, it's about the future of work. Okay. What are you saying? What do you believe? What questions are you answering? So it's content strategy is, I think, really what she's doing.
Right.
But that idea, I mean, if you can answer this question, what are people in your industry afraid to say? I think that... Mm. That may get you closer to it too. It's guts. But
right.
I can also step back from this and really agree with Sonia. And the point maybe not to try to be a thought leader. What is that anyway? You can get all the benefits that you wanted by declaring thought leadership as your goal, by doing the right things on these other, you know, have a message, have it be consistent, be helpful, be useful, have a personal brand. You know, publish consistently, take a stand when it's time. I think that regardless of the definition of thought leadership, what people are really trying to do is a worthwhile thing to do, and that it can be done regardless of whatever, you know, the semantics of the term.
Right.
But I feel like I'm interviewing you. I want to ask you another question on this. Tell me if you can thought leadership be outsourced or delegated?
My first instinct is no, it can't.
Must it be an individual, personal brand?
So my first instinct is to say yes, it is. It's a person. Now, but this goes to that idea of, are we conflating a lot of different activities under the umbrella of thought leadership? Mm-hmm. So I think maybe part of the disservice has been done because there's a lot of chatter in the space around people talking about personal brand and the need to kind of plant a flag. Hey, I talk to people about the importance of personal brand, but I think that there's a peers and colleagues in this space who will say, you have to be a thought leader. And they kind of make it seem like anybody can because it's sexier, to be blunt, right? Versus saying, hey, just share good, useful content, right? We have a culture that pays basketball players millions of dollars, but teachers, literal teachers, sometimes have problems paying the bills, right? Mm-hmm. So being a teacher isn't sexy right now. And I think that that's kind of, it's not sexy. So we think, oh, I want to be a thought leader. So you do have these authors and speakers and whatnot who are going, oh, you should be a thought leader and you'll be, that's what it takes to be successful. When all it does take is sharing good content, being useful, being helpful, and doing it consistently. I think that a brand, for example, I think that they can create a space for thought leadership, mm-hmm. or, you know, for example, having a podcast where those conversations are happening. Mm-hmm. But I think in the end, it's, you don't have thought leadership by committee, right?
Right. That Seth Godin was making that point that day. He made it in a couple of different contexts, not just the question about thought leadership, but it's like Nike signs Colin Kaepernick. They believe something. They are taking a stand. They're willing to try, you know, they're taking a chance, and they're willing to, you know, make an enemy. People, I think shoe sales went up because people bought their shoes just to burn them.
Right.
and then he talks about Procter & Gamble. Procter & Gamble does not have any beliefs. No one there has any thoughts. It's not a place for thoughts. It, you know, they're going to make some soap. They're going to sell some soap. They're going to buy some ads. They're going to, I think that's, if there is a hard 100%, let's all agree criteria, it's that you got to have some thoughts. And probably that means you've got to have some beliefs.
Oh yeah.
And I'm going to agree with Seth and puts me on the other side of Lee Price, in saying that, yeah, you know, it is partly about making an assertion and being willing to be wrong and that people will disagree. You know, there's things that that I believe that not everyone agrees with me on, and mm-hmm. I'm fine with that. But it's definitely not most of my content. I mean, that's maybe 2%. I mean, it's got not much to do with what I publish. You know,
go ahead. Sorry. What's your goal?
It's never been to be a thought leader, or, you know, it's just been to be a useful teacher. That's, if I can do that, I'm going to hit all of my goals.
But I think that, and this isn't even to the thought leadership point, but you have a perspective, and I, as somebody who's read a lot of your writing, even in the way you construct your articles, even in the way that you present your arguments, there's kind of a belief built into that, right? The belief of rigorous research, testing things, looking at the numbers. That is actually a specific point of view. It might not seem like it because it's yours, right? And you live it 24/7. But if I look at the whole spectrum of information on content marketing, I can find vastly different perspectives.
Yeah, that's true. There's things that if you were to look closely, you'd see are maybe relevant by omission. For example, and I'm going to call myself out here, and I'm going to make some enemies here. I think that storytelling is overrated. Have you ever noticed? I never tell stories. I have never told a story in my content. I don't need. It's not rarely. Yeah. I think you can crush all of your goals without ever telling a story. I know that it's like a sacred thing in content. Like, oh, you know, stories are how human knowledge is conveyed. You know, I get it. I agree. I love stories. But I do not think that a brand must tell stories to meet all of their goals in marketing. Maybe there's a few exceptions. You know, the About Us page, the origin story. Sure, tell that story over there. That's the We Love Us page.
Right.
It's a weird page. But in your normal content, you can skip it. I think it's possible. Try to find a story. There aren't any stories in my content.
Right.
So anyway,
Although there are pictures of your children every once in a while when you speak, because I mean, that's that's powerful. Well, and I a couple episodes ago, we had my friend Rob Biesenbach on, who's big on storytelling.
He is huge. And I love Rob.
Yeah.
I love many marketers who love stories. And I don't disagree with them that stories are important. But I also think that it's not sacred and it's not necessary.
Sure. And I think, to my point, that is a very strong point of view that you bring, and you back it up. You're just not like throwing ideas out there. And now I'm not saying that this makes you a thought leader, but I'm actually using it as a way to, I think, back what you're saying, where you don't have to like pursue thought leadership and still have a meaningful and useful perspective that is useful, right? And well, that helps others.
Yeah. I threw that out there as an example to see if it would feel different for a listener or for me saying it, because I think that's the feeling that you should kind of have if this is what you're trying to do. You mm-hmm. should be like, ooh, okay, I'm going to drop a truth bomb here. Get ready. Like this is like, here it comes. That would be, that feeling is probably a make or break criteria for thought leadership of like, I am willing to be wrong.
Right.
Here goes. The Oxford comma is bullshit. Do not use the Oxford comma.
Well, now we have to have an argument because I think the Oxford comma is super necessary. And that's a whole other podcast.
It's a big one. It's a big topic. I know. It's a funny example.
Well, you know, kind of, I think and we could probably keep talking about this for a while, but it sounds like one of the biggest things is for people to maybe not worry so much about whether or not they're a thought leader and look about connecting their activities, whether it's on a personal level, a company level, but connecting those activities to stated goals, mm-hmm. right? Just connecting to what they're actually trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah. It's if it's a strategy, which I don't think it always would have to be, but since we are talking about marketing and sales and business, then I think that it should be connected. Let's be strategic. We're going to invest time in something. Let's make sure there's an ROI.
Right.
But yeah, for sure. It's this is in the context. You know, Andrew Yang, that's thought, you know, he's sticking his neck out. He's thought leadership. It's a contrarian, controversial POV, his own perspective. He's got data behind it, you know, but yeah, he's got a goal. The dude's running for president.
Right. Well, and I think that might actually be a really good example of thought leadership, because he is not the first person to say there should be minimum basic income. He's not the first person to have this research. But what I think maybe brings the thought leadership component is now the leadership component. I am trying to bring, you know, you, my listener, or in this case, you, the voter, over into this new world I'm trying to envision,
mm-hmm.
right? And so, yeah, I think there inherently is going to, again, be that controversy, but the difference between him and whatever every other crank on the internet talking about minimum basic income for the last, you know, 15 years, I'm not saying they're all cranks, but, you know, we all mm-hmm. know kind of the mm-hmm. weirdo with the conspiracy theory. The difference is he's going, I am putting all of these different ideas together and then extrapolating that into a path forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, one word that you used today that will probably stick in my mind was imagination.
Okay.
That was not on my list of criteria. And I think that is part of it. You're seeing a future that you want to take people to.
Right.
You have in your mind a picture of this place or this idea or this realization, you know, that you hope that the person will come with you and arrive at that conclusion or have that, you know, land in that same place. I don't know that we defined it, man.
You know, I don't think we did, but I do think that we got a little closer to figuring out what it's not. And I will say this, I think that there are very few truth bombs really in the world. What I think there's a lot of though is people just hearing something and going, huh, that's mm-hmm. interesting. And then it kind of sticks with them. I've always found that for me, like the biggest changes in my outlook have always come not all at once, but I just hear this one thing and it kind of rankles a little bit, right? It just kind of sticks sticks in your craw. And then over the next couple of weeks, you try to digest it. And then you're like, okay, I guess I'm changing my opinion or my perspective.
Well, if you want to just hit this one, the Google definition, you won't impress you. One whose views on a subject are taken to be authoritative and influential.
Well, that's a tautology, isn't it?
That's all. Yeah, it's like that could. That's like
you influence people because people are influenced by you. Thanks, Google. All right. Before we dive into this rabbit hole more, I got to at least ask, any good beers you're drinking lately? I realize we talk about thought leadership too much and not enough about beer, but any good beers you're drinking?
No. Well, weirdly, now that it's cooling off, I am. I was drinking a farmhouse ale yesterday. It's the Apex.
Apex Predator. Yep. Another good Chicago beer.
It is a good Chicago beer. It's a really good beer. Certain tall boys, I split one with Crystal and then I split another one with her. So might as well have just had one.
But it makes you feel better. It's just, no, I'm just having two halves.
It's not the super hoppy. It's not my go-to. The other one that I like that's in the fridge now is Deschutes from Bend, Oregon. Deschutes Black Butte Porter. It's dark porter and it's good. Yeah. That's really more my style. The malty, you know what I like.
Yeah. Yeah. We can always give a shout out to Eddie Fitzgerald.
Yep. Shipwreck, we call it. Yep. Eddie Fitz, your Great Lakes Porter classic. Not hard to find, which is good news.
They've done a good job getting into the Chicago market. So thankfully, I think we're spoiled for choice here in Chicago, which is kind of nice. Very good. Well, we could probably keep talking for a long time, but I think this feels like a good place to kind of wrap things up. You know, one thing I always ask my guests at the end of the show is, what's one piece of advice you'd give someone to help them have a better day today?
Turn off notifications.
Ah.
Pick up a book. Stretch out your focus on one thing. Even a few minutes longer, it's good exercise for your brain. And the focus is simply the opposite of distraction. So if you want more focus, productivity, happiness, let's all do a mini audit of our phones and see when it's buzzing and when we can stop that from happening.
Amen. I love it. Andy, if somebody wanted to follow up with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
You and I are both like hyper-connected, you could say. We're active on LinkedIn. LinkedIn's a good place to find me. The other place where you can find my best publishing is on orbitmedia.com/blog. I write an article there every 2 weeks. And if you sign up, I'm not going to bomb your inbox. It's really just like twice a month.
Yep. I'm on that list and it's one of the few that I'm on. It's super useful. Thank you so much for joining me. And we'll put all the links up on the show notes. And also thank you to our sponsor today, Old Irving Brewing Company. I'm not completely finished with my gluttonous because it is a bomber in 20 ounces. 22 ounces during a short podcast would be dangerous, but I'm sure I will finish it up after we finish here today. But thank you to them for sponsoring us. And by the way, if you know a craft brewery, doesn't matter if you're in Chicago, you want to be a sponsor, we'd love to talk glowingly about your beer on the show. Please reach out, get in touch with me, and we can make you a sponsor. And also, if you did enjoy listening in, please hit that subscribe button to make sure you get new episodes in your podcatcher of choice and tell your friends. And other than that, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you next time on the next episode of Beer Beats and Business.
Cheers.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.